Hello and welcome to a brand new series of Building Podcasts. It's really good to be back with you. I'm Jamie Harris, Building's Digital Editor. In this mini-series of podcasts, we'll be talking to three experts from across the industry and going behind the hype of some of the buzzwords in the built environment everyone is getting excited about. We've heard these phrases countless times, but where did they come from and what do they mean for construction in reality? This week, I'm talking to Igloo's Chris Brown about social value. Now, joining me today is Chris Brown, Executive Chair and Founder of Igloo Regeneration. Chris, thanks for joining me.
Nice to be here.
Excellent. So firstly, should we go back to the start? Social value, where did this phrase first come from and how long has it really been in our lexicon?
Well, I probably should start by saying I'm not a social value expert, so I'm a property developer that's trying to navigate their way through these concepts. And I won't go back to Latin derivations or anything like that. But there was, I'm old enough to remember in, I guess, the 90s, people started talking about public value. And there was a kind of understanding that there were things other than financial outcomes that were important, particularly in public policy. But social value really took off when a guy, an MP, Conservative MP called Chris White, piloted a bill, private members bill, through Parliament in 2012, came into being January 2013, and the Social Value Act. And the story behind that was he was trying to get public sector organisations to build into pretty much everything they did, but particularly when they were buying services of various kinds, the idea that there were other things that they could buy at the same time, not just the value of that specific service. Government agreed to back his bill, but only on the basis that it was limited to the purchase of services. So it doesn't actually apply, the Act doesn't apply to capital goods or the procurement of a developer. But now that it's being used and has been used for 5 or 6 years in procuring services, you're increasingly seeing the same kind of methodologies and asks moving out into the buying of capital works, of construction, things like that.
It's quite interesting, the Social Value Act of 2013, we've sort of, it's 6 years ago now. So how has the attitude towards social value changed in those 6 years, would you say?
So I'd say it's built traction over that period. It's definitely moved beyond services. Most people involved in what I call the social value industry don't mention the fact that the Act doesn't apply to construction because it is being applied to construction and to capital works. And I think that's because local authorities in particular saw it in action in relation to procuring services and saw that it was a good thing. Mm. So, you know, a classic example would be apprenticeships. If in the course of a local authority buying stuff, it can get people, local people, onto apprenticeships, that's a win for them. If it doesn't cost them any more, they're very happy. And so they're seeing that with, say, construction, where the numbers tend to be a lot bigger than for services, they can actually make quite a lot of good happen by using the same social value ideas.
Okay. You mentioned that it doesn't currently apply to construction. Is that from a sort of official mandated point of view?
Yeah, so that's the legal side. You don't have to use it. Mm. The reality is more and more construction contracts are coming out with social value requirements embedded in them. Some, I'd probably even go to say most contractors have got their act together to understand how to compete, because when they're being evaluated, it's not just the bottom line price of delivering the contract, it's also how much social value are you going to generate.
That does actually bring me on to one of my next questions, which was, actually about the evaluation of social value. I mean, when people are procuring on these projects, obviously it might be seen as a nice to have or as something to sort of take you up to that next level or separate you from your competitors. But I mean, how is actually judged on a project in reality?
Okay, so I'm,
it could be quite a...
In danger of being kind of suckered down the social value industry route, where they've adopted these words and they've created around them a methodology essentially to turn them into monetary values. Mm. And when you're in that world, you very soon start hearing the word TOMS. And it takes a while before anyone will explain to you what TOMS are. And basically, it's T for themes, O for outcomes, and M for measures. And the themes are things that a group of people, primarily around the Social Value Task Force, have decided are good things for society. Nothing fundamentally wrong with that. Mm. But it's a kind of doing to approach. And so they've decided in the context of the time that things like growth and jobs are important to society. So those are two of the four or five themes, the T. And then they work out what kind of outcomes they're looking for. So that might be, you know, apprenticeships for local people, which might be defined as in the local authority area. And then what's happened is these have all been given a monetary value based on a load of economics, which it's unfair for someone like me to question it. But I do look at things like, so you might say apprenticeships, that's kind of social value, that's clear. Actually, the measures also have things that you might more describe as environmental. And in that area, they value carbon saved at £61 a tonne. Now, that's six times the cost if you want to go into the market and offset a tonne of carbon. But it's only two-thirds of the price that the GLA set in the London plan. So for me, that suggests that there's a degree of arbitrariness around the numbers. But essentially, that's what happens. Each of these themes and outcomes has a set of measures, and they, almost all of them, have monetary values attached to them, so that when you aggregate it all up, you can say, I have created X hundreds of thousands of pounds of social value. But as one of the leading kind of users of this, one of the housing associations said to me the other day, we have a number, but we don't really know what it means. Even they don't know what it means. And I suppose that's partly the hype, partly the industry. Mm. It might end up, like with environmental accounting, it might end up as big as financial accounting in due course. And so there are quite a lot of people who have a degree of self-interest in building this up to be an industry. It's not without its value, but I think we just need to be a little careful about the value we give to the social value industry.
Yeah. Okay. We've looked at how it might be measured in a sort of, I don't know, procurement contractual term. But in reality, what sort of measures are we actually talking about when people are, you know, introducing the social value points or initiatives into one of their bids? I mean, you mentioned apprenticeships, you mentioned some environmental and you know, carbon reduction initiatives, but what are the other kind of things that people generally introduce?
So there's it's actually quite recent. Earlier on this year, 2019, there was a specific list was agreed for what they call real estate, which kind of covers, I guess, most of what the listers are interested in. Mm. And I could dip into it at random, but Which I will. So I'll I'll go for 10, 20, 30, 40. Let's see where we come up with. So measure 10, number of site visits for school children or local residents. Number 20, number of voluntary hours donated to support VCSEs. I'm not even sure what that is.
Just to clarify, VCSEs are voluntary community and social enterprises.
Thank you.
That's a quick Google for you.
Number 30, initiatives taken or supported to engage people in health interventions, for example, stopping smoking, obesity, alcoholism, drugs. Number 40, embodied carbon reductions in CO2 emissions against baseline. And the final one, number 50, percentage of new buildings achieving BREEAM rating. So you can see there's quite a variety of things, and there's 56 in total.
56. I mean, just from the ones you pulled at random, there's clearly a wide variety. I mean, how do you focus on one in a project? How does one get their head around all of this when they're...
Yeah. So as a developer and one that's mainly working in deprived neighbourhoods, we think there's quite a lot of good things in these lists. And we find that the kinds of contractors that we're normally working with are pretty clued up about the first 30 or 40 of them, which are mainly around things that happen on construction sites, employing people, the type of people employed, getting people to visit, as you heard there. So it's becoming much easier for us to include those in construction contracts, and the contractors are happy to measure them because they're measuring them for public sector clients, and they're actually talking about it in their own publicity as well. So they'll do their own annual reports and they'll say, we've created £100,000 of value. There are others, mainly at the back end of the list, which are more developer related, things like doing post-occupancy evaluations and so on, which we do anyway. And so we'll, at the end of a project, we'll take information from the contractor and we'll take information from our own team, and we'll be able to fill in the automated forms, which is how you calculate social value, which have the monetary values embedded. But I think it's important to say that there's a lot of things missing from that list that are nevertheless valuable, and particularly they're things that are valuable to the local community around the site you're operating in. So the one I always come back to is, it sounds like it's the same thing, but it's completely different. So social capital. Social capital sounds remarkably the same as social value, but it's a completely different concept, and it's about the relationships people in the local community have with each other. And that's important because those are relationships which mean that, you know, when an old person has a fall, somebody in their local community, a neighbour, will go and help them. Those aren't valued in what we call social value in the UK today. But for us, probably, they're more important to get right.
Okay, so obviously there are a lot of things around social value, which we've gone into quite a bit of detail on, and essentially what it means, what kind of initiatives that people can put forward. But do you get the impression that the industry is getting to grips with, you know, the actual meaning, the actual reality of what social value is, or does it still feel occasionally like it's a CSR initiative, which firms are keen to sort of show that they're sort of nodding their head towards?
I think it's an evolution. The early adopters tend to be the people who do believe in it. I can remember, it's a long time ago now, maybe 15 years ago, interviewing Waits for a reasonably large construction contract. And we've, as an organisation, we've always been interested in this area and wanting to do the best we can. And we're talking to Waits, and they were struggling to answer our questions about social value. And it took quite a lot of digging. And because they're a family company, they've always done it. This is how they've always done business. Mm. And the idea that you need to train people, you know, employ apprentices and this sort of thing, that's just kind of what they do. They've done it for 100 plus years. So I think those kind of organisations, once they've got their head around this kind of new way of measuring and quantifying, it comes very easily for them. But I think we're starting to see an evolution where people recognise that there's competitive advantage to be had from being good at social value. Even if they're not good, they have to find a way to appear competitive. And that's when things start to go wrong. That's when people start inventing metrics and you start to get them employing consultants because the consultants will tell them the answers they want to hear. I think there's something here about license to operate. It's less a concern for contractors, but Grosvenor did a survey recently, opinion poll, and they found that only 2% of people trust property developers. And as one of my mates said, well, presumably there's more than 2% of the population are property developers anyway, so they've all voted for themselves, and some of them haven't even voted for themselves. But I think for property developers, this idea of a license to operate and the need to be seen not to just be greedy, but to be doing good for the planet and good for society, is becoming increasingly important. Mm. So I think there will be a driver from that direction in the coming years.
Yeah, I mean, all of the social value, the projects which are deemed to be, you know, measuring particularly highly or having a big impact on their community, are those sort of, you know, green space is at the focal point of that development. It seems like those particularly big projects are sort of the ones where, you know, people are waxing lyrical about this.
Yeah, it's actually a lot easier to do it on the big projects. Mm. It's much harder on the small ones. And apprenticeships is a good example. Yeah. You know, it's really difficult to train an apprentice. In fact, it's impossible on a small project. It's actually can be quite hard to do it just with one subcontractor, say. You know, you might have to move an apprentice between different employers in order to get them to the end of their training, certainly between different projects. So these are challenges, but actually the industry over the last few years, and that possibly inspired by the Social Value Act, but actually probably started before that, has become a lot better at being able to do that.
What are you hoping to see over the next sort of couple of years? I mean, the people that you're working with at the moment, are you just expecting this sort of continuously upward trend of a greater understanding or a greater focus on social value becoming central to projects? Or, I mean, what do you hope to see and what do you expect to see over, say, 18 months? Any longer than that is pointless predicting, isn't it?
Yeah. I think given the kind of political background of this, so a prime member's bill from a Conservative MP who's no longer in Parliament, sadly, because he was a good MP, and he's continued to champion this stuff. Mm. But I think given that background, I think the downside is that we'll continue on the trajectory we're on, which is that social value will become an increasingly important part of procurement of capital works in the public sector. I don't think it'll, in current circumstances, become the most important thing. I think it'll always be a welcome addition rather than the main event. I think if the politics changes, we might start to get something quite radical coming through, which is it does become the main event. But currently, I think business as usual looks like the most likely outcome. And people gradually learning about it, getting better at it. I think there will be this debate between whether the mechanistic way of turning it into monetary values with certain predefined measures is the only way, and whether you need to bring in ways of measuring social capital and social cohesion and well-being, which the government does at a macro level across the country, and which some people are starting to do at project level. I think that debate will go on over the next 18 months or so, but the pressures from local authorities to be able to aggregate on a common basis these kind of outcomes. Politicians love to be able to say they've created X million pounds of social value. Pressures from impact investors who similarly want to be able to measure their different investments on a kind of common basis. Those are the kinds of pressures I think that will keep us on this track.
Yeah, it does feel like just finding a way to actually put a measure on this and just say, look, this is what we've achieved. And I think that probably will be feels like it will be the key anyway for, you know, keeping social value going, because, yeah, it's quite difficult to measure otherwise.
There is quite a strong voice out there which says that if you turn things into monetary values, you somehow devalue them. The kind of turning stuff into money is a particular economist school of thought. There's another economist school of thought, which is actually you can do this statistically. So, you know, using the Office of National Statistics standard questions, you can measure the well-being in a community at the beginning and then at the end, and you can understand whether you've got better or not. You don't need to turn that into a pound notes number for it to be relevant.
Okay. So one final question. Obviously, there are several parties who may be involved in a particular project at its early stage. Is social value something that everybody from the architect to, you know, the developer to, you know, eventually the contractor and essentially everyone involved in that project, are they all having to be thinking about this, or is it generally led by one or the other? Or
the bulk of these measures are relevant to the contractor, but the team at the beginning does need to be thinking about them. If it's serious about maximizing the social value as measured in the way we've described, it needs to think about that up front. You can't add it on at the end. Mm-hmm. It needs to be part of the employer's requirements, for example, in contracting. I think it's a lot harder for the professional team, the design team. One of the things we're starting to do with our design teams is asking them about what they're doing environmentally, you know, their carbon, how are they controlling it, how are they measuring it, how are they offsetting it. But that's relatively small impacts compared with the impact of whether we're using concrete or timber in the building. Mm-hmm. So thinking about it at the beginning is important, but I think it's going to be the contractor that is mainly the organisation that's going to be affecting the social value and measuring it.
Chris Brown of Igloo Regeneration, thanks for joining me.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this building podcast. As ever, please do let us know your thoughts and feedback on these podcasts by leaving a rating and review on iTunes or by emailing building@building.co.uk. We really do appreciate all of your feedback. You can listen back to all of the episodes of this building podcast series, as well as our archive of podcast episodes, by going to building.co.uk/podcasts or by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. And on the next episode, we'll be talking to WSP's Matthew Marston about smart technologies. Until next time.